This is one session that I particularly wanted to have when we would come down to Stamford, because both of these gentlemen have been working here at Stamford doing a project which they've done for many years. And it started off, those of us interested in discography would hear rumors. There are a couple of people that are going to put out a book, a series of books. It's going to list every Matrix with Victor and Hey. You can't do that.
You're telling me? Two crazy people.
I think, you know, those of us who were here in 75 had a chance to meet Bill then. And we have had a fascinating past couple of days, starting on Wednesday night. Bill was going strong at 2:30 in the morning on Thursday morning. And he had put just about everybody else in the group to bed, and here he was with about three others of us at 2:30 in the morning. Fascinating. And the only other time I've had a chance to meet Ted was one time I was up at Victor on one of my short sojourns to New York, where I usually only have a half an afternoon to go in to try to find a couple of specific little pieces of information. And I was asking the girl about something. She said, oh, why don't you go in and ask Ted Fagan about that? I said, well, do you know Ted Fagan? I said, no, I've never met him. I know of him. And so she said, you know, I said, I've always wanted to meet him and speak to him. I'm spoken to Bill. He said, well, he's in the next room there. He's over by the copy machine. And so we went in and had a chat, you know, just a coincidence. We both happened to be in the city at the same time, up at RCA at the same time. So this is a, you know, now that the first volume is finally out, we've all had a chance, or most of us have had a chance to look at it.
I hope everybody's had a chance.
to look at it. And I wanted to have them have a chance to speak to us about the project. I know we are all fascinated. We're all eager. We all want it to be the best that it can be, because we all want to be able to you know, make use of it. And so I wanted to have the information coming straight from the horse's mouth. So, Ted Fagan and Bill Morin.
We're still speaking to each other.
Usually by mail. Well, Bill asked me to set the ball rolling. May I say, first of all, that we will welcome questions, because the project is so big, and the introduction of the first volume already gave you an idea of what we had gone through to start it and what we're going through to continue it, that we can talk for, as he's just said, and Michael just said, Bill can talk about it until 4 o'clock in the morning, and then I can take over and still not tell you what you want to know. So we're going to give you a very brief outline of what we're doing, and you all picked up, I hope, or got these handouts. And that'll give you an idea of the way the information appears at Victor, and then the front page is how we straighten it out, if you call it that, and what we're doing with the information that we gather. Now, I must admit, personally, that I feel very much inhibited here, because everyone in the room probably is an old-time discographer. Or at least, if you're not old-time discographers, you're experienced at it. This was my first essay at discography. Bill was wily enough not to let me know what I was letting myself in for. And, well, where angels fear to tread, sort of thing. I went blithely in and said, well, look, instead of just copying out all the Red Seal stuff, why don't we do it complete? And he quietly wrote me back and said, well, if you want to do it, by all means. That was sort of launching something that kerplunk, a lead boat. So I started to copy stuff out at RCA. Unfortunately, although we started about 20 years ago, we should have started at least 20 years earlier, because during the 10 or 15 years prior to our getting in there, a lot of people had been working at the files, working at them both as squirrels and as termites. Anyone who's done any research at RCA will bear me out in this. They have been extremely generous. They've been foolhardy in that they've allowed everyone to come in simply because they don't have the personnel. While I was there, they received a letter saying, my grand uncle, Mr. MacDonald, recorded for RCA, and I would like to know what records he made. thing was that Mr. McDonald recorded as Mr. McDonough. And this gentleman wanted the list of every record that Harry McDonough had made. Listing the Matrix numbers alone takes 3 pages. Single space. And they simply haven't got the people to do it. They used at one time to do it, and I know that was when Bill started collecting information. By the time I got there, people had taken stuff out of the files because they were reissuing stuff on LPs. They took the material to their offices. A lot of the stuff would probably wind up in their desks. They either died or were moved, and the stuff remained in their desks, and the desks were probably thrown out afterwards with the material in them. Entire ledgers are missing. One very important one that very few people know about, that in the early, in the 20s, when electrical engineering and recording started, RCA was recording the soundtrack of all films and giving them MVE prefixes. Now, there was a ledger this thick, this wide, and this tall. That has disappeared. Lock, stock, and barrel. The entire thing has disappeared. Fortunately, I had already copied it out, because I was copying whatever I hit. I'd take a ledger off the wall and just copy everything out. So that is at least copied out. But how much material disappeared before I got to copy it out, we don't know. This is where we have to take educated guesses, we have to conjecture, we have to recreate recording sessions. And this is where we appeal to everybody to understand the flaws in our work, but also to give us the assistance we need. And Bill will explain this. Why don't you explain now the business of getting there, everybody's assistance?
Yeah, I think that, I think everybody is willing to help, but how do you go about this? I ran into this way back, I don't know whether anybody even realizes the Bauer catalog first came out in 1938. And the war came along, and I worked on a revision of the Bauer catalog all during the war. Bauer disappeared. And when Bauer came to Earth again in 1946, why I sent everything I'd done, which is heaps of stuff, to Europe, and they came out with a new edition of the Bauer catalog. The way I did that was to take the old edition and get all my friends to give me information and fill in things. But, we didn't have matrix numbers. I pleaded with Bauer to put matrix numbers in when we had them. He said, well, we don't have them all. But the point was, then people started bitching about the Bauer catalog, and they said, well, it's missing this, it's missing that. I've had this record for 100 years. Well, how do I know this? We couldn't circulate to everybody every copy of everything to get them to fill stuff in. And we're in the same position here. That suitcase over there is full of the next volume of this thing. Some of you may have seen it in the DeBellis room. We can't put this thing out in Xerox form to everybody to go through. So how do you know what we need to know, or maybe you have a record we don't have, and this is a real problem. What we are doing this time, Quentin Riggs in Huntington Beach, and unfortunately he's not here, did volunteer. He's got a lot of, well, let me back up a bit. My interest for 50 years has been Red Seal vocal records, and I've got printer all of them, and so you have to work with the records, you have to work with the information from Victor, and it's all got to come together. If you don't have the records, you're missing part of the show. I don't have popular records of this early period because I can't have everything, and my interests are narrow. All right, Quentin is interested in a lot of this early material, so he has taken, we cooked up a second volume. It's, what is this, our third rerun of this first volume? So I think he's been through it 3 times now, and he's still working on it. At any rate, we made an extra copy of this, and Quentin is not going. Quentin is now going through this thing, checking every one of his records against the information in the thing, and this takes a heck of a lot of time. I get at least one letter a week from him with problems he runs into. He's got a record, and he says, I can hear Hooley in that record, and he said, but you say it's not Hooley, it's Dudley. And so then I start checking up, and I might spend 3 hours chasing down one problem to find out there was another take of this record made, issued under the same catalog number, but in a completely different recording. Then I've got to cross-index the thing and put the number of the later take with the first one, so if anybody's got that catalog number, they can look it up and find out and chase it down what it is. This is fine, because he creates a problem that somebody else is going to have, and I've got time to work on the answer. but how are we gonna get this one copy? Ted works in green ink, I work in red ink, and Quinn's working in purple ink. We run out of colors. We also run out of time. And if somebody has got some specific thing that they can do, I was talking to Mr. Fargo the other night about, everybody knows he knows more about Ada Jones than Ada Jones knew about herself. And one of our problems, what I have done with all Red Seal vocals, if two or more takes are issued, there's a note in the back of the book telling some sort of a way that orally you can tell those takes apart. Some of them pretty silly. The orchestra's got three chords at the end instead of two in one take, but anyhow, if you have that record, you can tell whether it's take one made in 1906 or take two made in 1917 by the different orchestration. So there's a explanation in the note someplace on there are three copies of three issues takes of McCormick's God Be With Our Boys Tonight. And they're all made within about a month. And I thought, what am I gonna do about this? Well, you listen to it carefully. He makes three different mistakes in reverses words and so forth. So there's a note in there, and you can play that record and find out what mistake was made. You can tell what take it was and tell the date of it, and it's a different speed than some other take. What people are going to be critical about is that this is done in this detail for Red Seal vocals, because I've got the records and I work with them. But what am I going to do about Ada Jones, Billy Murray, all the rest of them? Now, if Milford will volunteer to give us a list of the description of all Ada Jones records and say that the old timers, well, at least they had takes on them, and you describe the labels and so forth, somehow give us a musical description of the difference of those takes, we'll stick a note in there and we'll credit him for them and we'll be delighted. So, I mean, this is the kind of help. I don't know how else to ask for help unless people have got that sort of thing. Ted and I didn't organize this, believe me, so it's pretty obvious. But this is a Xerox we made this morning of the letters that Ted and I send back and forth. We support the U.S. Post Office. We had a problem in as you know from the first volume, and you probably knew anyway, in the early days, the catalog number and the so-called matrix number, the number on the wax, was the same. And they set aside blocks for certain things, and the block 2000 was obviously set aside for 12-inch and 14, because they're intermixed. And then went merrily onward, and sometime in mid-1903, they wised up, in April 1903, they started the matrix numbering system, and then they got catalog numbers in different blocks. But what they had was they had a bunch of missing numbers that have never been used, and they apparently went back, and we're beginning to discover little things like there's a Billy Murray record from It Happened in Nordland, which is a Victor Herbert operetta, and it's got a catalog number of, I think it's 2042 in there someplace. At that time, the catalog number was up about 4,400. So here they went back and they had some blank numbers, and apparently I've been told this record was some sort of an advertising record that was given out to dealers, and I'm told it's also part of a set of such records. So they're never in the catalog. In some place we got this one catalog number, and apparently Victor went back to some unused number or some number that had been discarded so long ago, meaning 4 or 5 years, that they weren't in that series anymore to put these special records. So I reconstructed here the 2000 series, and then put in whether we know they're 12 and 14, or whether we have no information, or whether all of a sudden here come Ada Crosley and these people in here, the first Red Seals. There's a Chinese records in here, but here's some Billy Murray's from 1906 in there. If any of you guys are interested in that particular period and think you might have these records, here's a whole bunch of questions you can help us with. There's no way, if it's not in a catalog and it's not in any publication from Victor, how we can identify this thing. So we've got a bunch of blanks because the books are gone. So that's the sort of thing that's going to help.
Well, another point is the tidying up. Now, if you look at this handout that you got, the first one is perfectly simple. This is the Sousa's band doing the Stars and Stripes. And what I did was Xerox what are known at RCA as the historical cards. These are blue cards listed by catalog number. The trouble is that you get these cards and you get very excited because you find the catalog number you're looking for and it says, see such and such a card. So you rush over to another one of the drawers of the 17 filing cabinets that are 8 drawers tall, and you manage to find the one that they refer you to, and it says, see such and such a card. So you rush off to the third, and then it refers you back to the first. The other point is that you find the card, and then you find the different colored inks used. Now, RCA has just spent God knows how much to have all the artists' files microfilmed. They did it about 15 years ago, and they've redone the thing. It got to the point...
Black and white.
Yeah. They're in black, not only in black and white, but I found that they had discovered a new great singer of the early part of this century, Madame Adelina. It's listed under A. Need I say more? So, your artist's files, you can... Well, you'll see what when we get to that in a moment. But the historical cards list virtually everything that you would need if you could only decipher it. Now, what I've done is Xerox all these cards that are, I think, something like 6 cards for the Stars and Stripes Forever alone. And then in the front, on the front page, I put the pre-matrix, which is the first volume, which doesn't appear on the cards at all, because those were entered longhand in beautifully ornate and illegible copperplate. Ledgers this big. Fortunately, they were too big for anyone to cart out. Otherwise, they'd have gone too. The trouble with them is that the paper has become so brittle that it doesn't tear, it breaks. The other mistake they made when they organized the files at RCA is that they put the catalog number and the matrix number on the top left and right and left corners respectively. So people leafing through the file index break off the card at the edges. Later they became more intelligent and they typed them in and then underlined. Now you know what happens when you underline cardboard on a typewriter. It cuts through beautifully. So you get the European catalog number and the European matrix number has disappeared because that was underlined with the typewriter. So these are some of the problems. Now the other problems are, as I say, the entries in different colored inks, which more or less, if you study the card itself, will resolve itself into the second part of the front page. And they use, here's where we've broken it down into what I've called the different generations. If you look at B241, you'll see A8VB0001. That is what I call the second generation, because that was a re-recording of one of the earlier takes. Then B6VB, that would be the third generation. And so on, right down the line. Every time they reissued a take, they re-recorded it and gave it a new matrix number. Now, most of these codes have been broken. Now we know what they are, most of them, but not all. In the second of these handouts, it's a very popular thing, Glenn Miller's Moonlight Serenade. And the next pages will show you how the artist index, the artist files are listed. You've got the front and the back, with the interlining, with the crossouts, with the references. God himself couldn't work it out. I've checked. Well, you said that, I didn't. But nobody at RCA can really tell you exactly what it's all about. So that on the front page, you'll see there are lots of blanks. So that people will fill them in if they have the information when we get to that point. This, after all, is not going to come out until quite some time from now. This is 1939. The next volume is 1903 to 1908. The periodicity of Greenwood's publications are something that I cannot bank on, and I wouldn't put my hand in the fire for. We are ready to go to press whenever the contracts are there and whenever the information has been put together. As Bill has just said, we cannot expect to give you a complete listing of everything and everything to do with every record. We're doing our damnedest and our best. And that is, we can only appeal to you people. We've got many of the catalog, but as you know, matrix numbers don't appear. When RCA puts out new LPs on their records, they're putting out their Camden series now on cassettes. I get the listing notices of what's going to come out on the cassette. They haven't given us even the matrix number from which these cassettes are being made. They give me the catalog number, and not always the original catalog number, but the reissue. So I had to break it down and find out. Fortunately, RCA telephoned me or write me and say, can you tell us? Last week they wrote that they were doing the Ezio Pinza cassette from the Camden. Could I tell them the original matrix number of Oblivion Suave, which is an aria he sang, from Incoronazione di Popea? So I have to look it up, and I can give them that information. But that will not come out on the listing notice, that will not come out on the cassette. That's only so they can know where to look for the damn thing. Which is a good point, which means to say that they're not taking these cassettes off the LP. They are going back to the original matrix to reproduce it. So that it, at least it's one point in their favor. And they are preserving a lot of stuff. And let me, before I yield the floor altogether, say that RCA does not, as I said earlier, have the personnel to look up the stuff, and they have been extremely supportive. Barbara mentioned how supportive Stanford has been of this project, and Bill knows it, and so do I, and the people here at Stanford know it. RCA has been very helpful and very supportive. They've given me every facility possible, short of having somebody to do it for me. I walk in, I can use the copying machine, I can go to any of the files, any of the floors. There is nothing that is closed to me. And I really do feel that we should, and we have, tried to pay them a tribute for the way that they have allowed us to go. Yes?
And what about the metal parts?